The death of God is about the drying up of a horizon of meaning and of a whole form of human life.
Where do we stand in the illusion it makes? What kind of space are we invited into?
The material relations between people become social relations between things. When we look at toasters, corn, and TVs,
to a large extent, live in the interregnum between worlds, if you will, or between paradigms. Not many people in the history of the world have faced that.
Zero Squared is the Zero Books podcast. This week's Zero Books podcast features a conversation with Comrade Communicator from the Intergalactic Workers League. A follower of Comrade High Commander, Comrade Communicator does media outreach work for this secretive leader, who is said to radiate such an intense amount of spiritual energy that he finds it necessary to hide himself from the masses. Posadism is an ideology, or movement, born out of the Fourth International, and headed by a certain J. Posadas, who, per Wikipedia, tried to create a synthesis of Trotskyism and ufology. Posadas' most prominent thesis, from this perspective, was flying saucers, the process of matter and energy. Posadas believed that extraterrestrials visiting Earth in flying saucers must come from a socially and scientifically advanced civilization to master interplanetary travel, and that the working class should welcome the alien invaders as their liberators. This interview took place at the Left Forum. We launched Angela Nagel's book, Kill All Normies, and it has now reached number one in online media and politics on Amazon. The book is basically out now, as people who pre-ordered have reported receiving their copies. Special thanks goes out to members of the Zero Books Club for their patience. We skipped a week there with the Inside Zero Books podcast. But this weekend, you'll be invited to listen to the second half of last week's conversation with Chris Catrone of the Platypus Affiliated Society. And everyone should look forward to an upcoming podcast featuring a panel discussion on Kill All Normies. The music you're listening to right now is a theme from Close Encounters of the Third Kind. But in just a moment, you'll be listening to Comrade Communicator explaining his alien politics.
You want to just go over here and sit down?
No, you're going to ask me questions?
Yeah, so let me just tell you, my name's Doug Lane. I do a podcast called Zero Squared. It was originally called Diet Soap. That was something I came up with in the 90s. Then I made it into a podcast about a decade ago.
What was your outlet in the 90s?
It was
like on a college radio. Oh, I thought it was like college radio. But yeah, because I'm thinking, what is the version of the podcast in the 90s? College radio. No, Zine. Yes,
And actually, the Zine Diet Soap, when I sent it out to Fact Sheet 5, you know Fact Sheet 5?
I don't actually.
It was a zine catalog. It was a reviewed zines. And if you wanted to find out about a zine, you bought Fact Sheet 5 and you would look through. So I listed our Diet Soap, the original zine that my podcast came out of. It was a UFO anarchist zine.
That's awesome.
And I wrote articles about how the aliens were a way to get outside of history and things like that. So, this was when I was in my 20s, and I only
have... Fellow anarcho-posadas, I love it.
Yes.
I think those are the only real posadas, are the anarcho-posadas.
But right, that's what I was like. Now I'm a Marxist, and since...
I'm a Marxian anarchist, right. Fundamentally. A Marxian anarchist who's never read Capital, but have gotten an I need to at some point. But anyway.
Right, I've read Capital Volume 1 now. That's how much of a wannabe Marxist I am.
No, that's legit, man. I love the Brumiere myself.
Right.
And I keep mispronouncing it. But anyway.
Yeah, but all right, but you are, what is your title?
My cadre name is Comrade Communicator of the Intergalactic Workers League, the SADIST.
And when did you join the party?
Well, I joined the party a couple of years ago when I met Comrade High Commander on Brighton Beach, and that is where the party generally meets, by the water. The water is very important to the SADISTs.
How did you discover this meeting was taking place?
I was just going to the beach, and there I saw these strange people, led by this weird little shirtless Russian guy who looked like a cross between Bordiga, Brother Theodore, and Nikita Khrushchev.
Okay, and you saw this and you thought this about him right away, and then what did he say to you, or how did he get you involved with what was happening?
Well, I just watched him for a while. I listened to him, and then I had some conversations with him, and it became very clear to me that a lot of questions I've had about the left and about the potential of revolution that he had some very good answers to this. That we're all waiting for something. We're all waiting for something more or less horrible to happen. That's entirely disconnected from our revolutionary activity, or what we call our revolutionary activity. Most of our work is busy work, but we're waiting for environmental collapse. We're waiting for things to get better before they get worse, or get worse before they get better. But what we're really waiting for is a goddamned alien invasion.
Okay, and all right. So let's stop here and focus in on this. What are the central tenets, or what is the platform, or what is the critique of capitalism that the Posadist offers, and that your guru, High Commander.
Comrade High Commander.
High Commander.
He isn't a guru. He does everything he can to avoid the cult of personality. For this reason, he does not show his face anywhere. In fact, he is such a great and charismatic leader that if he were to show his face, such a cult would form as Stalin took decades intentionally cultivating.
Okay, so you have seen him.
Oh, I have seen him. My God, I have seen him.
Okay.
But I will. The Posadist critique of capitalism is actually a fairly standard Marxian critique. You just have to go to Capital for it. We have a critique specifically of the left, of leftist busy work. That we have gone at this point beyond the stage of farce. This is something else. This is third time as LARP. And pardon me, we believe the left is doing some things right.
Okay. Go.
And what we are doing right is that it's something that actually has been described as a pathology, as a kind of apocalyptic fatalism. This waiting for things to happen, waiting for the next election, waiting for the coming insurrection, waiting for the general strike, the nebulous concept of the revolution, the vanguard party, these things that will happen at some point, more or less either without us or in a kind of question mark profit way, that are completely removed from our day-to-day activity. But we think that this is the beginning of an unconscious Posadism. Simply, we must understand that what we're waiting for is a force that is outside of history that could sweep away all of the historical defeats that we've suffered. A force that is not weighed upon by the nightmare weight of dead generations. A vanguard that stands outside of history. And this is a vanguard that comes from the stars. An alien civilization that has achieved communism and could impart it to us.
Okay, and do you know when the aliens will arrive, or do you have is there an expiration date on this, or are we merely to wait, or can we wait with some expectation?
We must act. We must work to seize the means of detection, to infiltrate SETI, which we have found is fairly difficult. It is a fairly tightly controlled CIA front that releases a great deal of false information, false signals, in order to discredit the entire process, but keeps the truth deep within itself, deep within the bourgeois elite. Another thing that we can do is to demand disclosure. This should be adopted as a transitional demand by every proletarian party. And in fact, the last election, This was a monumental election, the American election, where one candidate, Hillary Rodham Clinton, at the behest of John Podesta, no relation to Jay Posadas, of course, adopted this program of disclosure. John Podesta is well known in ufology circles, and he got close enough, being the campaign manager, to the front runner to make this happen. And what happened? The FBI, the KGB, now known as the FSB, conspired in order to defeat this, granted, neoliberal bourgeois candidate, but who, as a tiny plank of her program, had the most revolutionary communist thing possible. UFO disclosure. Bernie Sanders had nothing like this. He's a mere social democrat. And this was taken from her specifically because we ask ourselves, why would the FBI work with Russia? Because the KGB is the Russian agency, the Soviet agency, in charge of preventing disclosure, in charge of covering up the alien craft that have visited the USSR and Russia. The FBI is a major American agency doing the same thing.
So you think that we're not really waiting to be contacted, but we're waiting to understand that we've already been contacted?
Yes, and to make contact again, to make proletarian contact, to make contact on our own terms. We believe that it's quite possible that the contact that the American and the Russian government made is anything but benign. They have been experimenting on our space, comrades. They have been taking their technology and using it for vile ends. We don't know why the space comrades have not responded with force. Perhaps because they are very peaceful beings. Perhaps they have a kind of prime directive. But as we can see, as you know, Star Trek is fiction. But the idea is that a prime directive is rarely going to be followed. We need to create a situation. We need to make them understand that it's life or death. They have to intervene. And for this, we need proletarian contact.
Okay. So would you tell Marxist, all the different kinds, all the different parties, that they should be teaching Bud Hopkins and Whitley Strieber along with Marx and Lenin? Is that an important thing to do, to read the UFO literature from the 40s through now?
Most certainly. And they must also read Jay Posadas, who, Comrade High Commander, theorizes, synthesized, without explicitly saying that he did so, Marx and Charles Fort, a Fortean Marxism, in the same way that figures like Reich and Lacan synthesized Marx and Freud. And this is an essential project in order to create a proletarian scientific endeavor that lies both outside of profit-driven capitalist science and bureaucratic Lysenkian Stalinist science.
Okay. Wow, I'm having trouble just taking this all in. The one problem I think some people might have, I mean, up to now, I think a lot of listeners are saying to themselves, I'd like to talk to the aliens. This sounds like a good idea to me. But then, if they read the fine print, they discover that there's a price to pay before we can really make full contact. There seems to be, I'll just say it straight up, a genocidal element to your ideology. The call for global thermonuclear war probably won't sit well with most of your, you know, hippie, peace-loving Marxists. What do you say to that?
Comrade Posadas' stance on nuclear war has been greatly misunderstood. If you read the texts that are available, he says that he would rather that there were no nuclear war. However, at the time when he was writing, it was a historical inevitability, and this was seen by just about everyone. He was simply the only one who took this inevitability and applied a dialectical materialist analysis to it instead of cowering in a corner. He saw a potential of a global revolution arising for a global crisis. Comrade High Commander explains this through his crisis scale theory. The Russian Revolution came out of World War I, which was an international crisis, which is fundamentally a series of national crises. And the proletarian revolutions in Europe fared on a pretty tight scale with the depths of the crisis in the particular nation. Russia had the deepest crisis. Of course, the level of proletarian organization was also a factor, but crisis scale theory is an important way of understanding the Russian Revolution. for a global revolution, we need a global crisis. And Jay Posadas's first hypothesis was that that global crisis will be the thermonuclear war, and that we will build socialism on the gently glowing ruins of the capitalist order and Soviet bureaucracy.
Okay. Well, so I'm hearing a lot of things here. I'm hearing, first of all, that maybe we should throw some support to Hillary Clinton. Would you say that you would encourage her to run again in 2020?
Most certainly not. If she runs again, it is impossible that she will once again adopt the disclosure plank, because she is probably more aware of why the election was taken from her than anyone else is. As a matter of fact, if you remember Barack Obama, after Hillary Clinton made the disclosure promise, made his own disclosure promise, that he would disclose the files before Hillary Clinton got into office. But once Trump was elected, we never heard of this again. Why is this? It is because Barack Obama, pardon me, it's because Barack Obama knows what would happen to him. It would be trouble. And Hillary Clinton has been warned. We need to find another candidate who is willing to do this. We lost a great opportunity in 2016, and I do not know if we will regain it. We certainly won't with Clinton. There's nothing else to be said for Hillary Clinton. I cannot emphasize this more.
What do you say to those Marxists who would claim that you're a lunatic and that these ideas are simply, they're not even wrong, they're so stupid?
Well, that's not really an argument. It's an insult. It's a refusal to engage with the ideas, and it shows a deep lack of understanding and, honestly, a deep lack of self-respect. These are unconscious Posadists. If they look at their day-to-day actions and if they look at their supposed goals, they will recognize that our at least our goals are connected to our actions, and our specific conception of revolution is at least theoretically feasible, whereas most Marxists today, as well as most anarchists, hardly have a conception of revolution. They just have the word and sometimes some academic jargon to obfuscate the fact that they can't even imagine what a revolution looks like and what might bring it.
So you can say that for you, imagining a world after capitalism is just as easy as imagining the end of the world. In fact, they go together.
Yes, but we once again, we want to avoid the nuclear war.
Okay.
We imagine a world after capitalism already exists, and not one world, but billions and billions of worlds after capitalism. Worlds that perhaps never had to suffer capitalism. And these worlds, we must bring these worlds to us, and some of them have already come to us. We must call out for aid from these worlds after capitalism or without capitalism to create such a state of affairs on our own world.
So I'm really almost sold here. I'm just a little concerned that it's possible that the aliens haven't visited. And what would you say to those people who would claim the evidence for UFO contact is shaky at best, that maybe you're overstating the case, and that we might want to look somewhere closer to Earth for our solutions?
It's entirely possible, but it's very unlikely, because the evidence is, in fact, overwhelming. Simply look at this election. How else do you explain the FBI working with the FSB and the alliance collapsing immediately after the election? Comey is clearly not a friend of Trump. He was simply an enemy of disclosure. How else do you explain the hundreds of thousands of eyewitness reports? How else do you explain? It's overwhelming. Anything is possible, certainly, but it's not very likely.
Okay. Have you ever seen a UFO yourself?
I actually have not. To be honest, I've lived in cities most of my life, and I don't spend very much time out of doors. But I know many people who have. Many very trustworthy people. I had a high school teacher who said that he once saw, along with many people, a UFO, a saucer, that flew right above him in the 70s in New York, and later it was reported on the news as an advertisement for a Canadian bank, a promotion for a Canadian bank. Sir, if that was, as he said, a promotion for a Canadian bank, my God, that level of technology, we would all be speaking English and French right now.
Okay. Well, is there anything I didn't ask you about that you wish that I had, or something that we haven't covered yet?
Oh, there is a myriad of things to cover, but I think you've covered a great deal, and I am quite satisfied with this interview, sir. I believe that you will present the Posadas case in a fair and even-handed way to your audience.
Well, thank you for talking to me at the Left Forum.
Thank you.
And perhaps at that moment, somewhere else in the universe, on a distant planet similar to his own, somewhere on the other side of our galaxy, other intelligent beings wandered too, and set out in airships on an adventure through space to search for their answers.
Okay.
Or actually, do you want to do a question?
Yeah.
How do you want to do this as Eugene and Comrade Communicator are two different people, or do you want to be real?
Let's just be real.
Okay, that's fine. I was just checking which one's more amusing. Okay. Too many layers. I'm sorry. I had to suggest.
That's fine. I'll tell you why I want to do a real, because there's something to your art project that is sad to me and true, which is that we are... I've been through the left now for the last 9 years. I started out, an anarchist. I became a Marxist. I'm 46 years old. I was recently even involved with, Marxist reading groups and things, and I've done the sectarian dance, and I feel very much, after this election, especially, sort of at a loss. I felt like I was at a loss in 2008. That's why I started podcasting again over under my old zine name.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to figure out why there had been an economic crisis. I felt like after 5 years, I kind of had a good handle on that. But now I've realized that understanding capitalism, understanding why it goes into crisis, and understanding Marx doesn't seem to deliver me to a political stance that makes sense. I don't have a revolutionary ambition that I can articulate as well as a Posadas can articulate theirs. So what do you hope to do with this project? And is there any chance that something like this, a satire, would actually help someone like me figure this out?
You know, I honestly don't know. Like this is when I talk to people seriously about this, I say that my tone is Swiftian, in the sense that Swift actually hated the Irish poor, if you know what I mean. It is a very depressing and pessimistic project. I have some optimism about certain projects. I mean, I worked with the IWW. They do wonderful work, for example. There's a lot of great organizing that's happening.
Yeah.
And the depressing thing is, however, is that really none of what we do has the end point of communism. There's too much question mark before the profit, as it were.
Right, right.
That's really what, you know, like, I sometimes feel that it might be, like, I feel bad about doing this sometimes. I giggle to myself, and then I start crying, because it's kind of a mean joke, and I feel that people are doing a lot of good work. People are doing a lot of wonderful work, and I don't want to shit on it. That's the last thing I want to do.
Right.
And I feel bad if it comes off like I'm doing that. I think it's a way, at the very least, for us to laugh at ourselves, to look at how far away we are from even conceiving of how we can get to this better world. I mean, sometimes I think that getting to communism, getting to this better world, to this new society, is as easy as everyone just shrugging and saying, why the fuck are we doing this?
Right.
I mean, we talk about class interests, and that's a real thing, but communism is in the interest of the billionaires, too. They'd be healthier. They would have less guilt, the ones that have a conscience, and the ones that don't have a conscience would not have to be conscienceless beings, you know?
Right.
It's why sometimes I wonder, why don't we just look around and say, let's just, like, drop the pretenses of this poisonous society and share in the abundance that is now technologically feasible? Why don't we Why don't we have automation that reduces labor hours as opposed to automation that creates further immiseration and concentration of wealth? It makes no goddamn sense to me why.
But why? What do you think it is? What is the stumbling block? Why is that demand for, say, fully automated luxury communism become an absurd Posadist position so easily?
Because I think that the most absurd thing you can have in a patently ridiculous society is a reasonable demand. That's kind of a flip answer, but I think that's basically it. I sometimes, and this is it was a stoned idea of mine, and this is very applicable here. I think that a technological base that is so advanced that it's indistinguishable from magic might require a materialism so advanced that it's indistinguishable from idealism, which is to say, fundamentally, we talk about these material conditions, but the only reason that capitalism persists is because people think they have to do it. Because people think they have to keep doing this. They have to keep relating to the material conditions in that way. Because any alternative has been shut. Because we've all been locked into a very dangerous and kind of tunnel vision-y game in terms of game theory, if you know what I mean.
Right.
It's the dead weight of all past generations on our tiny little primate brains.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I you have to be right in a way. If we can't change society by changing what we want and what we do, then we can't change society, right? But then I also think that just not wanting to be capitalist anymore and thinking that there's another way to live isn't going to cut it. You have to actually create something new. You have to create some way of producing the world and reproducing yourself in the world that will not be based on exploitation, that will also further industrial production and further the kinds of wealth, real wealth generation that we experience as a byproduct of value production now. So I feel like that project of creating a positive replacement, a real new economy, is hard. Like, and I almost feel like to even start to dream one up, to put pen to paper and write down a plan, is a massively utopian and maybe delusional thing to do. Like, I'm writing a science fiction novel about my vision of what this replacement would be like, and it's dystopian, you know? And it's also absurd. But it's the only way I feel like I can begin to imagine this.
Is it based on Paracon?
It's not. But it's actually, it's based on Silicon Valley singularity.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, and VR taking over. Basically, everything becomes gamified. So you go to work because it's the game you're playing.
Oh, have you seen the Black Mirror episode?
Yeah,
umpteen million credits.
Yeah, everyone mentions this fucking Black Mirror episode.
I wanted to write something on that, and then I was like, Charlie Brooker and the other major co-author whose name I forget of that episode.
Well, if you get the novel, it's called Batch Batch Revolution. Mm-hmm. People will not think about that. It's totally different.
Oh, sure.
But it's at least you didn't say, it's like that Star Trek episode, The Game, where everyone puts on the... which that, my wife said when I told her about it. So anyway. But yeah, it is a little bit like the Black Mirror episode. And actually, that's the thing. I feel like maybe our dystopian visions of what capitalism is usually miss the mark. That, like, we don't actually live in a society of spectacle, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
We wish we did. These dystopian visions are actually also, like Freud said, your nightmares are actually things you want, right? Even your nightmares, your dreams are generated by what you desire. So I feel like our dystopian fictions about horrible futures where the computers control us are actually something we want. But see, now I'm sounding like a fucking Posadist.
I mean, I don't... I disagree with that. I don't think that the dystopian visions about computers controlling us are about what we want. They're about what we're living in right now.
That's what everyone says. No, I know. That's what everyone says. But we don't live in a society where our culture and our what we do for leisure time and our machines are controlling us. Those are all sentient, real, physical things. We're living in a time where an abstract value production and profit making is what drives everything else. And so if we could get to the level where it was actually just a physical machine telling us what to do rather than this abstract system, we'd be closer to the real human lived experience, strangely enough. It's actually more alienating than the vision that we're having, is what I'm saying.
That's an interesting thought. I mean, fundamentally, though, we are living right now, I guess, in a transitional society where the abstract machine controls our lives in a broad way, but in a very narrow, direct way, our desires and our pleasure gratification instincts are tied into these machines that are themselves entirely controlled by this bigger abstract social machine. And I think there will always be a social machine controlling these machines. I think the best dystopian science fiction points to the social machine controlling the physical machine.
Right. Yeah. But I just think we need a better social machine. We need a better one than we have.
I think I want to say here, this is very important, that we don't approach social administration as a technology. I thought about this years ago when I was a college student, when I was reading about the EZLN, the Zapatistas. Mm-hmm. And these folks, this society, this revolution, looks like its political technology is way, way centuries beyond our 18th century political machine, as it were. And I think part of building a better world is understanding a kind of human direct democratic, or a more direct democratic, more human political technologies, which is some of which could be a combination of older traditions from different parts of the world, as well as the utopian imaginings of anarchists and communists.
So back to your project, what has the reaction been? How do people generally get the joke and enjoy it, or how do people respond to you?
I think that people definitely get the joke when I explain it. I think some people get the joke off the bat. I know that there are friends of mine who heard a podcast I did, the Social Justice Warriors podcast on SoundCloud, who think I'm a Trotskyist now. And the thing that they're kind of bummed about isn't that I believe in saucers, is that I'm a trot.
Are you a trot?
No. I am an anarchist communist through and through, sir. And a Posadist in my heart in some ways.
Okay. All right. Well, this is a good conversation, too. I think I'm going to stop it there.